Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for April 6, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, South Korea may be joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at how calf operations can positively affect real income. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 572, down 10 and 3 quarters. July, 575 and 3 quarters, down 10 and 1 quarter. Soft May wheat settled at 527 and 3 quarters, down 8 and a half. July, 527 and 3 quarters, down 8. May corn settled at 385, down 1 and a half. July, 393, down 1 and a half. September, $4 and a half, down 1 and a quarter. December, 409 and 3 quarters, down 3 quarters. May soybeans settled at 978 and a half, down 7 and a half. July, 983 and a half, down 7 and 3 quarters. September, 973 and 3 quarters, down 6 and 3 quarters. November, 968 and a quarter, down 6. May soybean meal, 323, down 430. May soybean oil, 31.26, up 22 cents on the day. Some last trades. April live cattle, 162.65, down 37 and a half. April feeders, 219.75, down 62 and a half. And April lean hogs, 63.15, and they are down 2.5. And those are your settlements for Monday from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says an active weather pattern will impact U.S. crop areas during the next 2 weeks. The U.S. Midwest area will be among the wettest, with showers expected periodically through Friday of this week and a larger storm Sunday and Monday of next week. Rain totals over the next 7 days will vary from 3/4 to 2.5 inches, with local totals in the 3 to more than 4 inch range. The greatest rainfall will occur from Missouri to Ohio. Coverage will be close to 100%, with the previously dry areas in the Northwest Corn Belt getting 3/4 to 1.5 inches and local totals over 2 inches. The U.S. Delta will see showers during the next 10 days. Showers that occur this week will be brief and light until Thursday, when heavy rainfall is possible. Another storm system may bring rain to the region again on April 12th and 13th, and then on April 16th and 17th.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
At least three micro fundamental features to discuss today. We want to certainly touch upon what NASS might tell us at 3 o'clock. We want to touch on weather, and we want to touch on the potential of what the market could produce off of the Thursday WASDE report. Let's take them one at a time. Start with NASS.
Well, this afternoon's report ideas, well, the main focus is going to be the eastern belt on the wheat conditions. There's some ideas. We see some deterioration from too wet a weather in some areas, flooding. I don't know if we're going to lose a whole lot of acreage, per se, but, you know, it's a little concern, especially with the soft red winter wheat. And, of course, we continue to monitor the western belt. You know, we're extremely dry. We had some winter kill, a little more than what the trade expected. So we'll see what those numbers are for the wheat. That'd probably be the primary. Secondary would be corn planting progress. Of course, Louisiana's going to virtually have zero corn this year. Seems like they've just been bombarded with one system after another, keeping them in slow mode on progress on trying to get a corn crop in. Of course, when you look at the south, there's not that big of acreage there to really get concerned about this point in time. I think, you know, as we move further north, that'll be more critical here as we go into mid to late April, if we continue to see that. But it's the first benchmark we go for to monitor off of, especially corn.
Which takes us to a discussion of weather, and it has been fairly wet thus far.
Well, too wet in the south, east, too dry
in the north and west.
Yeah, and right here in the middle, just right. But I've not seen Goldilocks show up, so we'll, you know, it's dynamic. There's issues and concerns, especially if it's your own farm. I mean, you know, producers get a little excited this time of year, but, you know, we'll see how things unfold here as we move into late April here.
And then we have a WASDE report on Thursday.
Just basically going to plug in the numbers from the stocks report to give us some ideas where we are on usage. The corn number is going to be a little bigger. The bean number is going to be a little smaller. There is a little talk that maybe we underestimated last year's corn crop a little bit. You know, we'll see how that unfolds. Bean usage was strong. We moved a lot of beans the first part of the marketing year here. Bean sales, bean exports are going to be slowing down here as, you know, the world market focuses on the southern hemisphere. I don't know if we'll see a whole lot of number changes in the southern hemisphere, but Argentine guys are talking, you know, very, very aggressive yields in South America. So, you know, we'll see if there's any adjustment there. The bottom line is worldwide we're going to have ample supplies of beans to work with, you know, over the next 6 to 8 months.
It seems that all these fundamentals have the market, if you look at the technicals, locked in a sideways trading range.
Correct, yeah. If you look at a price chart, I mean, we had some ups, we had some downs, but we've been sideways, more sideways in a cash grain chart. If you call up your elevator guy and keep track of the cash bids, they've virtually been somewhat sideways here. There's been some spot up, pent up demand instantly every now and then. The thing is, if you look at the option trade suggests that we're going to stay in this sideways trading range for quite some time to come. Option volatility's fallen off the cliff in through here. You know, look for it to pick up as we go into the growing season. The weather starts to become more of a factor. But right now, the option traders are just taking advantage of the ups and downs.
How long do you believe that the sideways market can continue? Provided, and here's the caveat, we don't get something out of left field.
It's going to continue until probably we get into first part of June. You know, we start seeing this pattern stay to the south and the upper Midwest dry out, and the weather bulls will be chomping at the bits to get something going. You know, commodity trading is, one of these emotional types of business to be in. It's looking for something to, the market's looking for something to get the trade to move one way or another. We've been just coiling sideways. So, hot, dry forecast as we move into the heart of the growing season, especially upper Midwest, as the Farmer's Almanac has indicated, would get the taxi cab drivers putting orders in on their iPhones, Dave.
We could have a tsunami of corn arrive at elevators after planting is finished. If we do see that all at once in a big glut, will it be most likely taken up by futures or basis?
Well, no weather concerns. It'll be both. Futures were dragged. The basis was starting to widen out. You know, if we see a little weather concern and the commodity firms turn buyers, you know, they'll definitely widen the basis out on that. But once, like you mentioned, once the producer gets a crop in the ground, things look good, he'll be more eager to move. Hopefully we'll not wait till late summer to move it to make room for a new crop. That's the biggest fear right there is guys could hang on, and then we could see a pre-harvest low as we move into this fall.
How does the dollar over the period of time we've been talking play into all of this?
Well, I've got my own theory about it.
Right.
I've stated that, many of times. It's a conversational piece. If the dollar would move on up to this 125, 130 area, I mean, it'd be a little bit more effective, mm-hmm. For say. But it's something to watch, especially if you manage money, especially if you deal with overseas materials, or if you're an overseas buyer or seller, it's a little bit more dynamic. But, as a producer, I wouldn't let that make you panic one way or the other. I definitely did not encourage guys to plant more or less this spring and through here. I think you just got to focus on using the ups in here to get caught up on sales to get to where you want to be going into the summer.
Are there other macro fundamental factors that producers should be watching? I think about the Fed raising interest rates. I think about the mess that's this week with Greece trying to find money to pay back the IMF loan. What about these kind of items?
Well, if you go clear back to 2008, I was told by people in the know, and people listening to this won't believe it, but they said that it's going to be 10 years before you start to see interest rate hikes. So we're talking 2018. I don't think the Fed's going to do anything. We're going to have a presidential election coming up. So I think it's a while before you see any big increase in interest rates. You might have a tick or something like that. But I think that's a ways away yet. The other thing is consumer confidence. We're starting to see consumer beef demand starting to pick up. And it's not just demand in general. It's prime cut demand. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see people go to these high-priced restaurants and shell out, 50, 60, 70 bucks a meal for some prime beef. I think that's quite encouraging looking long-term.
Thank you much, Kurt.
All right, take care.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In agricultural news, a senior trade official says that the 12 nations currently participating in Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations have given their approval for South Korea to join the regional free trade talks. South Korea is weighing a decision as to whether it should join before or after the conclusion of the TPP agreement, or even after the TPP takes effect. South Korea already has bilateral or multilateral free trade agreements with 49 countries around the world. The International Monetary Fund ranks South Korea as the world's 13th largest economy, with a gross domestic product approaching $1.5 trillion. The Washington Post is reporting that enthusiasm for increased business opportunities in Cuba are bumping up against the stubborn realities of Cuba's limited economic capacity and uncertainty about what is permitted under both U.S. and Cuban law. The U.S. already is among the top 10 countries exporting to Cuba, with frozen chicken being the largest agricultural item. But before U.S. businesses are able to sell more to Cuba, obstacles involving credit, banking, and financing will need to be overcome, and the Cuban government will have to provide more economic opportunities for its people. Food prices in Russia are soaring. Beans and grains are 53% more expensive than a year ago, while sugars at 51%, fruit and vegetables at 38% higher, and seafood climbing 33% in ruble value. Moscow's ban on food imports from nations which sanctioned Russia have pushed inflation to double-digit readings not seen since 2002. Greece's finance minister has told the International Monetary Fund chief that their country will repay a loan from the organization that is due this week. Greece must repay a 450 million euro IMF loan installment by Thursday. Texas grocery store HEB is pulling Blue Bell ice cream from shelves as a precaution after a recall of some of the ice cream maker's products that were connected to three deaths in Kansas. Blue Bell on Friday suspended operations at its Broken Arrow, Oklahoma plant that officials previously had connected to contaminated ice cream. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Winter nutrition for the cow-calf operation is key. Todd Gleason reports it may be the best opportunity to positively affect real income.
This was the message heard during the annual Beef and Beyond conference. It was clear and concise. The winter feeding program at a cow-calf operation separates profitable farms from less profitable operations. It depends a lot on stored feed, says University of Illinois beef cattle specialist Dan Scheich.
How much stored feed are they having to purchase, and what is their winter feeding program? We would like to graze as many days as we can, but if we can't graze, we have to feed them something, and what's the least cost approach?
The least cost only works if the cows meet acceptable performance standards. These are to maintain appropriate body condition, to calve once a year, and to wean off as heavy a calf as possible. But there's more.
We've not given much consideration in the past to what is happening to the fetus that's inside. We focused on the cow, we focused on that calf that's nursing her, and yes, we want to make sure we get her bred, but we haven't really thought about, okay, now the cow's bred, and not only is she nursing that calf, but she also has a developing fetus inside, and the nutrition and the management that we're imparting on that cow also could have impacts on that developing fetus. And there's plenty of data from human epidemiological studies to other animal models suggesting that maternal nutrition or nutrition during gestation can have lifelong impacts on that, on the progeny.
The results with beef cattle are mixed in this area of study and varies from region to region, mostly as it relates to available forages. This seems obvious, but the clear message is if the cows are in poor body condition and not being fed enough, there's a great deal of risk to herding the calf. Under winter feedlot conditions, this means the properly managed cow produces a calf which eventually yields better marbling. Heifer calves, kept for breeding, benefit from good nutrition in the womb, too. They weigh more, mature earlier, and have better conception rates.
All this later in life, when they're a year or 2 years of age, was set when they were 3 or 4 months as a developing fetus through the mid and late gestation. Mid gestation is when a lot of the fetal development occurs. Late gestation is where a lot of fetal growth occurs. Now, on the other side of that, what we've seen is if your cows are in good body condition, if you keep them in that body condition score 5 and 6 that we always tell producers that they should, a short-term restriction doesn't have a large impact. But if the cow's already thin, if she's a body condition score 4, if she's already on that marginal line where you should be concerned about her, and you're restricting her, you should anticipate that you could be restricting that fetus. Because if she's in good condition, even if you're not feeding her enough, she'll mobilize body reserves. Some of that extra body condition she's carrying, she'll mobilize those reserves and still supply the appropriate nutrients to the fetus.
The body condition scores run from 1 to 9, with scores of 5 or 6 considered optimum. Scores of 8 or 9 are too fat. Scores below 4 are too thin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with a look at cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
There is some portion of the corn crop still out in Champaign County and other areas you serve. In other areas around the country, the number may even be larger than what is here. But I think that some kind of a large wave of corn may be coming at elevators immediately following planting. And if so, what probably takes the brunt of that? Does it the futures, or will it be the basis?
I think the conventional wisdom is that it would be the basis, maybe some combination of both basis and futures. We've seen basis levels extremely strong for as big a crop as what we had this year, and I think that can be attributed to lack of farmer selling. So if that farmer selling does in fact pick up once they get the crop planted, then you would think the basis would weaken, and then as far as futures prices, it probably is all up to the funds and the farmers and, you know, whether they think it's prices are headed lower or higher. But I guess I could see where the basis could get a little bit weaker post-planting time.
Mm. And new crop marketings, how are producers doing?
They're either in one of two camps, the slim or the none camp. New crop market, I think they have to get rid of the old crop corn before they get real excited about wanting to sell new crop corn. And, you know, if that report would have been friendly, or if we see a little bit more follow through on some planting delays and the weather-related concerns, we may see a pickup in new crop corn sales, but we haven't seen that yet.
What about new crop soybeans, which are reported to still have some weakness to the downside in it?
Yeah. The report was a little supportive to the beans, so I think now farmers have gotten back into that mode of, if it gets to my price or close to it, then I will sell, but I'm not going to panic and sell. If we would have seen a big bean acreage number, maybe that would have panicked a few farmers into selling, but that didn't materialize. So the magic number seems to be $10. I don't know if we'll get there, but if we can get even close to that, maybe that'll generate some new crop bean sales.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Was it $10 on the board? Why don't you go ahead and tell us what your prices are today?
All right. We've got cash corn at $3.78, new crop corn at $3.87. Old crop beans are $9.71, new crop beans are $9.46, old wheat is $5.18, and new wheat is $5.20.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with the folks from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Caramel Popcorn Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Massachusetts created the first inspector of milk position in the U.S. It was not long before a report showed that milk sold in Boston restaurants was often diluted with as much as 40% water, and chemicals were added to make the diluted milk appear white. The diluted milk sold for as much as 5 cents a glass when fair market value for good milk was 8 cents a quart. In 1930, Twinkies went on sale for the first time with a banana cream filling. But in World War II, there was a banana shortage, and vanilla cream became the standard filling. By the way, early Twinkies had to be eaten almost immediately. The eggs, milk, and butter gave the Twinkie a shelf life of just 2 days. In 1932, C. Glenn King at the University of Pittsburgh isolated vitamin C from lemon juice. In 1938, Roy J. Plunkett accidentally discovered Teflon. And in 1954, TV dinners were introduced to the public. C.A. Swanson and Sons introduced the first TV dinner, roast turkey with stuffing and gravy, sweet potatoes and peas. It sold for 98 cents and came in an aluminum tray ready to pop into the oven. Supposedly, executive director Gerald Thomas came up with the idea when the company had tons of leftover turkey from Thanksgiving. The idea for the aluminum trays came from the trays used for airline food. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
An excessive amount of moisture remains in the soil across the southern parts of the Midwest, and we're not likely to see any major changes in the pattern for a while. More rain is likely to occur across the Ohio River Basin. In fact, all of the Midwest will likely be impacted by additional precipitation as we move forward through the next full week to 10 days. The weather out there this morning looks a little bit gloomy. A lot of cloud cover present across western and southern portions of the Midwest. Temperatures are balmy, though, running mostly in the upper 40s and 50s across a big part of the region. There are some reports of light rainfall and some drizzle occurring across parts of the region. The temperatures will warm up a little bit this afternoon, but cloudiness and a chance for showers will stay with us all day long. And because of that, we're not going to see a big heat wave move across the region. And conditions in the lower Midwest will likely stay relatively poor because of all the moisture that occurred from the excessive rains of late last week. We will expect to see precipitation increase a little bit later this week, and as it does, the potential for more flooding will likely come back again. In the meantime, though, precipitation over the next day or two won't be all that impressive. We are expecting to see a few hundredths of an inch, working upwards to maybe as much as a quarter of an inch of moisture occurring in some locations today. Kentucky will again be vulnerable to some of the greatest amounts of precipitation today, along with parts of Ohio and Pennsylvania. And we'll expect to see amounts running upwards to a quarter of an inch in these areas, certainly a far cry from the multiple inches of rain that fell over the early part of the holiday weekend, resulting in widespread flooding. Kentucky is certainly high on the list of areas to be watching as we move forward through this next couple of weeks because of the very wet and flood situation that's going on there. Southernmost Indiana and some neighboring areas in southeastern Illinois are certainly included in the area to keep a close eye on. Well, the next storm system of size to impact the region will probably evolve as we move out just a little bit later this week. Tuesday night into Wednesday, they will see some enhanced rainfall, and Wednesday night into Thursday, even more enhancement will likely take place. The storm center that will be pushing into the region at that point in time will finally start to push out of the region as we get into Friday, and that's when we'll see weather conditions starting to improve again. Over this next several day period, there will be more rain across almost all of the Midwest, and certainly that which occurs in the upper parts of the region will be welcome, since parts of Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas have been running a bit dry, along with Wisconsin, over the last several weeks and months. The precipitation in those areas will be sufficient to lift the topsoil moisture. We'll look for rain totals running anywhere from around 6/10 of an inch upwards to an inch and a half, and maybe some localized totals getting upwards to 2 inches. The lower parts of the Midwest, though, will not get spared in this particular event or two. We're expecting both the weather systems for this week and into the weekend to generate 1 to 3 inches of additional rainfall across many of the southern parts of the region. Wouldn't be surprising at all to see a few totals getting up near and slightly over 4 inches by the time we get to the first part of next week. Areas from Missouri to Ohio will be most favored, but Kentucky is still high on the list. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
This is the Closing Market Report, and this is Dave Dickey.